Hello, this is Bob Patterson with Street Photography Magazine. Welcome back to a very special audio interview segment of this issue. And today we're with Keith Dannemiller. If you have been reading some of our past issues, you may have seen the feature on Keith back in September 2016. Keith is an American photojournalist living in Mexico City, and he's from not too far from me, from Akron, Ohio area. And he's been in Mexico for quite some time. So, Keith, welcome back. Glad to have you with us again.
Thank you, Bob. It's nice to be here. Akron, Ohio, some 30 miles south of Cleveland, was where I grew up. And now, yes, in Mexico for 30 years. The last 30 years I've been here in Mexico. So nice to talk to you again and look forward to the chat.
Yeah, same here. Well, before we get into it, Keith, why don't you just share just a little bit of your background? Tell us how you happened to get from Akron, Ohio to Mexico City. That's a big switch.
any coming from anywhere to Mexico City, I think, is a big switch these days. Akron, I went to Catholic grade school, St. Sebastian, in West Akron. Went to St. Vincent, St. Mary's for 1 year. I was there a few years before LeBron. Went from there to high school in Kentucky, in Mayfield, Kentucky. Went to university at Vanderbilt in Nashville, Tennessee. Got a degree in biochemistry. Stayed there for like a year and then moved to San Francisco, where I worked for as a research assistant in a laboratory at UC San Francisco. And also at that point started to take photographs on the street in San Francisco in a relatively serious way, and studied sort of informally, but as a registered student at San Francisco State University, and got some, quote, formal training as a photographer and photojournalist there, and began freelancing, actually sold some photos to both the Chronicle and the Observer during those days, and then moved to Austin, and there began to work much more as a freelance photojournalist for local publications, but also then, you know, moving into more national publications and making trips to Mexico and Central America, to Nicaragua and Honduras. And with that background, was able to make the decision to move to Mexico 30 years ago and continue as a photojournalist based here in Mexico, working in Mexico and working in Central and South America for national publications in the States and international publications, in a lot of them in England and France. And am still in that groove as a photojournalist, but as you and probably most of your listeners know, the market has drastically changed for photojournalism as far as distribution, as far as placement, as far as opportunities for photojournalists to get published. As far as that part of my photojournalistic being has dropped, but I'm still working on a lot of personal projects, documentary projects here in Mexico City and elsewhere, and also continue to do some like small photographic workshops here in Mexico City, like basically walking tours that turn into small workshops as we walk around in Mexico City and try and get to some places that are highly photographable and interesting for the people that partake in the walks and the tours. So in a nutshell, that's pretty much where I'm at today.
Yeah, before we jump into the meat of this, I'm curious about your workshop. How are they, like, one day workshops, weekend workshops?
No, well, I call them workshops because that's sort of organically what has developed. They are, you know, I pitch them as there's a tab on my website called Mexico City Photo Tours. Anyways, you go in there and you take a look and you can get an idea of what I do. And it's people that come down, and it's mostly people that are coming from the States, from Europe, from Australia, that want to see something in Mexico City and have a little bit more adventuresome spirit. You know, it's not, I specifically, you know, let them know this is not you know, get on the bus, get off the bus, take a photo, get back on the bus kind of thing. We walk and we go into, you know, some neighborhoods that are more interesting that you're than you're normally going to see on a sort of a package tour of Mexico City kind of thing. We don't make sites, historical sites and museums and things like that part of the tour. It's not geared, it's not focused towards those places. It's more geared to a street photography kind of walk along and tour. And like I say, organically, what's developed is sort of a workshop situation, you know, sort of ad hoc on the street as we walk around and people come and say, you know, everybody from my husband got me this camera for Christmas and I don't know what to do with it. You know, I've taken photographs, but everything has been on P and I'd like to learn something different. You know, people like that to more, you know, the other end of the scale to full-fledged street photographers who really just want a new venue to look at and to be able to photograph. And I've, you know, really the whole experience has been really fulfilling, you know, for me. I enjoy the sort of teaching part of it and the workshoppy part of it. And I've met just an incredible array of people who, like I say, normally the demographic of the people that are, you know, coming to take the tour or to take, you know, to walk along with me, it's a different breed of person. It's not the person that's, you know, worried about necessarily about what's the political situation or what's the safety situation in Mexico at this point. They've already done their homework and they know, you know, what they can expect and what to look for when they come here, and so they're ready and, you know, more than willing to get off the beaten path a little bit. And so that's what we try to do. Like I say, it's been really, really fulfilling for me, the people that I've met and the people that I've come in contact with, that, you know, I've learned from people too, you know, walking around and watching how people interact on the street in a new situation is really interesting to me. And I've seen that and tried to learn from that.
Yeah. You know, every time I teach something, I think I wind up learning more than the student.
It's always, you know, for me, it's like I say, most people come and, you know, have their own, you know, unique individual sort of style of doing things on the street and how they interact with other people that they may not speak the same language and, but still want to take a photograph of. And, you know, all that's really, really an eye opener for me in most cases.
Yeah, that's really nice that you're in a place where travelers come and they need the help of somebody who, number one, speaks both languages, and number two, knows the lay of the land. I mean, mm-hmm. what a great opportunity for you and for them.
I hope everybody sees it like that. That's, you know, that's the idea, is that, I mean, I've been here 30 years and I sort of have an idea of where to go and where not to go. And, you know, the where to go places are interesting enough so that, you know, people will be stimulated as we, you know, walk around and talk and go over, you know, photographic ideas and things. So
now, that's not why I got Keith on here, though. Let me give you a little bit of the backstory. I heard from Keith just the other day, and he wrote me telling me about a new project that he did. And he actually did it in the U.S., North Carolina, and I was very curious about it. I thought, you guys are readers, would be interested in this as well. So I thought, let me just get him on the phone, and let's talk about this. Keith had just over Christmas time, back in late 2017, a couple months ago, was in Wilson, North Carolina. And I'll be honest, I have never heard of Wilson, North Carolina until I saw your story. And so I'm just very interested, number one, how you happened to go from Mexico to Wilson, North Carolina, and how did you pick this as a place to photograph? And really, you have to look at the photos that he produced as a result of this. They're really amazing. I was blown away by it. I look at a lot of photos, and I've seen a lot of his work too, but this is really something. So anyway, how did you happen to wind up in Wilson, North Carolina?
The story starts probably 6 or 7 months ago. I saw a link to a photo festival called Eyes on Main Street, which I don't know if you've heard of this or not, but it's a photo festival, outdoor photo festival, that's held every year in Wilson, North Carolina. And the director of the program of the Eyes on Wilson Festival is a guy by the name of Jerome Deperlinghi. He's a Belgian photojournalist and has been living in the States for a long, long time. And at some point got, I think it was, had an assignment nearby or passed through or worked on something in Wilson, which is about 45 miles to the east of Raleigh, if you know where Raleigh is in the state of North Carolina, and has a population of about 50,000 people. And Jerome decided to stick around, bought a house, refurbished a house, is two or three blocks off the main drag in downtown Wilson. And 4 years ago started the Eyes on Main Street Outdoor Photo Festival with a selection of photographs of really well-known photographers and photojournalists, world-class people. I mean, like James Notchway, I think Salgado has been there. And what he did was he got a collection together of photographs of these photographers and placed them on freestanding, you know, like little kiosk kind of situations, and also in a lot of the storefronts on the main street, hence Eyes on Main Street, on a lot of the store, in a lot of the storefronts, in the windows of the storefronts on Main Street in Wilson, North Carolina, to try and establish sort of Wilson as being a place for the photographs are from 100 photographers, and they stay up for 100 days. And this year it's starting in April. April 18th is the inaugural day, and there's a series of some kids' workshops. There's some roundtable discussions with photographers. There's obviously presentations of the work. And what happened different this year, this was 3 years of putting those photographs up. And what he decided to do this year was to invite photographers from outside through this application process that I saw in June of, or maybe it was May of last year, to invite photographers to, you know, come to Wilson and photograph in Wilson for the period of 1 month. And so I saw this and I thought, wow, this is, you know, astounding. I haven't, I would love to be able to partake and participate in this. I hadn't been back in the States for more than like a week or a week and a half in 30 years. And this was going to be a month. And I thought this would be, you know, just amazing if I could do this and to be put into, a very different photographic environment, so different from what I usually photograph here in Mexico on the streets of Mexico City. So I went ahead and I applied, and lo and behold, I got accepted. You know, to my surprise, I was accepted. And then we had to figure out, you know, what month, when I was going to be there. And one of the things that I decided immediately, almost immediately, was that and knowing that there was a large Mexican population in and around Wilson, I decided I wanted to do something focusing on the Mexican population there. So I thought, you know, what month might be a better time to be there? And I came up with December, given that there's the feast day of the Virgin of Guadalupe, who is, Mexico's patroness on December 12th. There's days that lead up to Christmas and a series of sort of parties and festivities called posadas. And then there's Christmas Day, which is obviously really big in Catholic Mexico. And so I decided December would be a good time. And I checked the weather, you know, and the climate for December. And it didn't look too bad. It looked like, you know, it would get a little bit cold, but it wasn't going to be, you know, the Arctic. And so I opted for December. Yeah, really.
It got cold down there.
It did. Yeah. It snowed a couple of times. And so I opted for that December, and I was the fourth person. There was a guy. The first person was I think he was from Colombia. There was a guy from France, and there was the first guy was I think Croatian, and a guy from France, and then a guy from Colombia, and then myself in December, and then the rest of the people will come after me, different photographers, men and women, who have been selected to do it there in Wilson. Wilson is going to be, obviously, for a town of 50,000, is going to be one of the most photographed, you know, towns of 50,000 in the United States during this period. But anyways, long story short, once again, I arrived. I had a place to stay. The Eyes on Main Street Festival provides an apartment. They provide you with a bike, which I didn't use too much. I basically got around on my own on foot and on the city buses that are there. It's not a very developed system, but it's fine. It gets you to, you know, places outside the city center, the downtown area, and it worked just fine for me. And I did, in fact, before I left, make some contacts with the Mexican American community or the Mexican community there in Wilson, and had, you know, a couple of people ready to talk to when I got there, and they were just, you know, absolutely wonderful as far as sort of, you know, opening doors and inviting me in and letting me photograph in any and all kinds of situations, from, you know, church groups to family get-togethers to parades to marches, individuals also, you know, letting me into their homes. It was amazing. But obviously that was not the only thing that, you know, attracted me while I was walking around. I walked around a lot, so I met a lot of people on the street, met a lot of people that I could photograph in different situations through those meetings. And the photographs that result, I didn't go there, you know, really, although I wanted to focus on the Mexican community, I didn't go there with the idea. I didn't go really with the photojournalistic idea of, hey, I want to take the pulse of the Mexican-American community in North Carolina, you know, in December of 2018. That wasn't the idea. It was much more of sort of a loose documentary idea. Go, have some contacts, but then let things develop organically as I was there. And that's pretty much what I did. And I was, you know, extremely happy with the results that I got by working in that fashion. And, you know, I don't have, like I say, I like the images that I got, but I don't necessarily say that, you know, if you look at these, you're going to see exactly what things are like in Wilson, North Carolina at you know, today. It's more like this is my impression of how things are in North Carolina with anybody and everybody that lives there in Wilson today.
Yeah, I guess I do have a question. The first photo on your in your gallery on your website, and I encourage everybody to go look at this, and hopefully you'll allow us to put a few in the article. No, it's a picture of a little girl on a school bus. How did you get on a school bus? I mean, people are so protective of their kids, and schools don't even like you coming into school buildings anymore. I go, wow, that, and I just love the photograph. I mean, it's, I can see why it's your first one.
There's a school, sort of a, it's like a magnet school, a grade school, elementary school in Wilson, mostly Hispanic and African American kids as students. And I had made a contact with a guy, a Mexican American man there whose wife teaches at the school. And so one day he said to me, "Hey, you know, you should go meet my wife, and we can go to the school and meet my wife, and you can probably take some photographs there." So I said, "Yeah, that sounds, you know, wonderful. I'd love to." And did, and met her, and, you know, obviously introduced me to the principal of the school. And in my, you know, quote, pitch or whatever to her and explanation to her, I said, four words. I said, "Eyes on Main Street." And she said, "Oh yeah, go for it." She said, "Go for it." And I said, "Yeah, that's wonderful." Because everybody in the town, not everybody in the town, but, you know, people that, are up on things and read the newspaper and follow things in Wilson and are concerned about where Wilson is and what's going on, know about the Eyes on Main Street photo festival. So when I said that, it was like, you know, carte blanche. And, you know, she said, "Yes, go ahead. You can photograph, you know, just, you know, follow these sort of simple rules and that kind of thing." And the woman, the teacher, was a sort of a drama and music teacher, and these students on the bus were going to a nursing home to give a Christmas presentation at the nursing home. So I, you know, tagged along and rode on the bus and then photographed at the nursing home when they gave their presentation. And that photograph, you know, resulted from being on the bus with the kids riding to the nursing home.
Yeah, you know, so many, I don't know, we see a lot of photographs, a lot of work from people in large cities. And I think small towns in America and everywhere else are very underrepresented in, you know, this type of photography. And so that's why I was so happy to see this. We had a featured photographer a couple months ago, Hal Padgett, who, he's in the Jacksonville area, but he shot a lot in small towns around Jacksonville, northern Florida, Georgia, and has done a lot of similar work, obviously a different style. And it was so good to see that. We've been reaching out and asking people to do stories about their local area. Not that we don't like New York City and London and Chicago and places like that, but let's see what else is going on out there. And so this is a great example. Of course, you had more access than the average person, but still.
I think I probably did, but I mean, you know, one of the things that, yeah, my take on the small town sort of aspect and focus of it too is I think it might be, I'm not sure about this, this is, you know, just sort of anecdotal, but it might be a little bit easier to see some trends and to look and maybe separate where things are at, you know, sociologically sort of speaking and culturally speaking in a small town than it is in a big city. I'm, you know, you can probably, you know, there's plenty of your listeners that'll say, you know, not really, you know, you can see it anywhere and you can see things. But I thought, you know, there's this, what's going on in Wilson specifically right now. And one of the reasons I was glad I focused on the Mexican community there is there's this overlay over the last 20, 25 years of the increase in the Mexican American population in a place like Wilson, that this overlay of a new culture that has to find a space and has to try and blend with the existing, you know, superstructure of the white culture and also the African American culture that's in Wilson. I mean, the population of Wilson is 45% African American. So there's these, you know, very distinct groups that are, you know, integrated, but sometimes not so much. And here you have, you know, the Mexican population and the Mexican culture and the Mexican society coming in and trying to find a space in this area. And, you know, that's, like I say, I wasn't focused you know, directly on trying to answer that question. But at the same time, I think the photos maybe do say something about that, you know, how the three major groups, you know, get along in this small town.
Well, when we had our last presidential election, one of the big issues, I think one of the things that sort of carried him into office is this anti-immigrant attitude.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the people I've seen who are anti-immigrant are people who live in areas where there really aren't any.
Uh-huh.
Coming from
uh-huh.
Appalachia, where I'm from, I thought that was kind of odd because in cities like New York and L.A., where there are lots of immigrants, people don't seem to have a big problem.
Right, right.
What's it like in North Carolina? North Carolina obviously voted big time for the Republican candidate. And then here you have a little enclave of people from Mexico. Are they well received there? Are they part of the community?
It's sort of a yes and no answer, and I'm not trying to evade or mm-hmm. avoid answering the question, but it really is. There's a visibility of the Mexican community, of the members of the Mexican community in Wilson, but at the same time, there's an invisibility because of obvious concerns about many of the people in Wilson are there without papers, undocumented.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're, you know, it's really a conundrum. It's very sort of, like I say, visible and invisible. I would put, you know, on that spectrum, everybody falling somewhere in that, you know, range of those two ends of the spectrum. But there are many people that, you know, work and are integrated into the community, into the Wilson community, paying taxes, being registered, having their businesses registered, having to, you know, deal with local laws in one way, shape, or, you know, one way or another, but are not, you know, registered U.S. citizens. That doesn't, you know, denigrate them in any way at all. They're there and they're working and they're hardworking. But, you know, they, over the period, many people, you know, that have been there 20, 24, 25 years have never gone, you know, never taken that step to try and figure out how to you know, get regularize their immigrant status or their citizenship status. So, and then you have the other, you know, on top of that, there's a lot of DACA kids yep. or young adults in the area. And I talked to plenty of them.
Yeah, that was one of my questions.
Yeah, they're there and they, you know, the same sort of situation when it got suspended, you know, and as up in the air as things are right now, you know, some of them, if this, you know, if it doesn't become law, you know, by supposedly March 5th, there's going to be, you know, when the deportations, quote, deportations, I would call it more, I would give it a more draconian name than that. I think, you know, deportation is actually sort of a, you know, a nice name for it. I think it's like, you know, sort of uprooting and tearing apart, you know, people and families and businesses and jobs and students and all that. When that starts happening, you know, there are obviously going to be people in Wilson, probably some that I met, that, you know, are going to get a letter and say, you know, you've got a month or 3 months to get out. And so that's overlaid too in the Mexican American community. But there's so many people that, like I say, are integrated into the community, you know, guys that run auto repair shops that have everybody, you know, coming to get their car fixed from him, you know, a taqueria that a couple of women from the state of Oaxaca own and run that's been there for years, that was a wonderful place for me to go eat almost every day. other businesses, I photographed a guy that runs a construction company and has, you know, a pickup truck with ladders on top and equipment in the back and his name plastered all over the side of it and the phone number to get in touch with him. He has no papers. He's from Cuernavaca, Morelos, you know, south of Mexico City, and he's been there for, I think he's 16 years. And, you know, so there's this range of, once again, visibility, invisibility thing going on and within the Mexican community. And then you have that on top of, you know, the existing sort of social structure in a place in a small southern town like Wilson in North Carolina.
Was this a big surprise to you, having been away for several years?
I lived in the South, like I said, when I went to high school and when I went to University at Vanderbilt. So, I mean, I had an idea of what North Carolina was somewhat like. It surprised me a little bit, you know, to read. I wasn't quite up on things, but to read that the state seems to be. I always had the idea that North Carolina was, you know, a little bit more progressive. Jim Crow laws, when they were in effect, didn't really, you know, weren't as heavy duty in North Carolina as they were in some other places in the South that we can mention or not mention. And so North Carolina always had this picture in my head of North Carolina as being a little bit more liberal and progressive. And really, after like you said, the last election, things were fairly straightforwardly Republican, and that did surprise me a little bit. The fact of the Mexican community and so many people there without papers and sort of without papers, but at the same time integrated in the community. Yes, that surprised me quite a bit. I guess I had an idea that there was some kind of, you know, most people were in some kind of process, you know, and maybe had a temporary visa to be able to work or something like that. But in reality, there's not a whole lot of people that are there and can say, you know, I know that I'm going to be here in a year from now. You know, and that raises the question, sort of begs the question of, well, don't you wake up every morning and think, you know, this could be the day? And a lot of people, you know, they do, they say that, but a lot of people too at the same time just say, well, you know, if it happens, it happens. I'll figure out what to do. And I may not want to go back to Mexico. I like it here in the United States, but if it happens, that's what I'll do. And that'll, so it's, you know, it's a multifaceted, it's a complicated situation with the Mexican-American community there.
I have to admit, I mean, I'm surprised by this. Of course, where I live, we don't have, you know, we don't have a large Mexican population. But I always, just like you, assumed that most people were legal in some way, you know, with a green card or, you know, working towards citizenship.
Right.
But I didn't realize it was so prevalent.
Yeah. There's, you know, it's, yeah, like I say, it was a surprise to me, and there are a lot of people like that.
Well, let's get back to the photography.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, I find that very, that fascinating.
No.
You need to have all this social commentary. So you mentioned that you may be doing a show as a result of these, your project?
The Eyes on Main Street, you know, normal, regular, yearly exhibition will go up on April 18th. The people, or a number of the people, I don't know if everybody will be involved in it, but for at least like the first six or seven of us, probably through this month of February, will also have, you know, individual, or not individual, but group exhibitions of the photographs specifically that we took in Wilson. So mm-hmm. It may be a dozen, it may be 15 from each person. And those those photographs will go into galleries, either converted, you know, abandoned places in downtown Wilson on Main Street, or existing galleries already in the town. So there'll be probably, yeah, like six or seven of us that photographed in Wilson, and that'll be, you know, really nice for the people that are there to be able to see, you know, themselves in some of the photographs that were taken.
Oh, I bet they'll find that exciting.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. I'm going to be driving past there, or not near there, in May.
Uh-huh.
If I can convince my wife to stop for a few hours, I'd love to stop in and see it.
Oh, you should. Yeah. It'll be up through what would be 100 days, April, middle of May, middle of June, middle of July, you know, maybe till the end of July it'll be up. So, and you know, a call to anybody that's in the area that's listening, you know, in North Carolina, Virginia, South Carolina, you know, that would be a wonderful sort of weekend trip to go to Wilson and partake of the photographic possibilities that are there. It's a nice little town too. I mean, it's the Wilson existed as the major tobacco buyer's market. I mean, the big tobacco companies used to go to the warehouses in Wilson and buy their tobacco from producers and growers, you know, in the area. And it's still a big tobacco growing area, but obviously, you know, not as it used to be. Not as big as it used to be, but it's still an agricultural area, and that's one of the reasons why so many Mexicans arrived back 20, 25 years ago, the first wave of Mexican immigration and Hispanic immigration from other places too, in Central, some in South America, was because of the agricultural possibilities, the needs of the farmers, you know, for workers in the fields.
I notice in your collection of photos, you have a number that look like photojournalistic photos. And then, uh-huh. But then you've mixed in some that are, I don't know, probably not the right term, but more abstract, uh-huh. Which I think is a really nice mix.
Yeah, I guess that's a tendency in a lot of my, you know, work. I shoot, you're probably referring to like some of the storefront stuff.
Yeah. Yep.
The American flag made out of plastic cups, those kind of things. I mean, they're obviously things that I just really did not try and limit myself. I just sort of, you know, went and shot what I saw and what I felt would work as a interesting photograph. And I mean, if you think some of those are abstract and a little bit strange, you should see some of the other stuff that I didn't put up. I did not limit myself and sort of tried to get out of the box a little bit with what I was shooting. And yes, there's still some straightforward, you know, more photojournalistically, I'd call them sort of, you know, photojournalistically adventuresome images, and sort of, if there's a term that I think works, it's something like personally objective. They're obviously, you know, straight ahead photographs of something that's going on or a person in a situation or something like that, but obviously with a, you know, a little bit of a personal twist to it. I like the mix that's up there. There's, you know, the other thing is I got a little bit of feedback from my wife and my son as to what would work and what, not really what would work together, just sort of what they, you know, I had my favorites, and I said to them, you know, don't even think about sequencing or anything like that. If you see an image that you like, just tell me. And so between the three of us, that's sort of what got put up on the webpage.
Yeah.
www.keithdanamiller.com if anyone wants to look.
Oh, it'll definitely be in the article for sure.
Yeah, okay. It's easy to find. Yeah. That was the reason behind that is I didn't want to just have 20 up there on that selection, just 20 or 25 photographs of people necessarily. There are a lot of people photographs, but I also wanted to put some other stuff to give a feel, you know, for what this place is like too.
Well, as a photojournalist, you obviously are very good at editing your own work, which is difficult for most people. Any tips you can give somebody when they shoot a massive amount of photos like this, how to narrow things down?
I'm really not sure I'm, you know, that great an editor, especially my own work. One of the things I will say I do like to do is to give it some distance. I came back, you know, every day after I photographed, I went out every day and photographed. Every night I would put things up, and I would sort of do an edit at that point, a very quick, wide edit, and you know, just put some stars on them or something, or a color bar beneath them in bridge, and say, okay, here of the, you know, 350 that I shot today, here's 30 that, you know, look possible. And what I did then is when I came back is, you know, all those that I had starred or marked, I just sort of let sit. I didn't look at them for probably about 2 weeks. I just, you know, stayed away from it. I didn't really, I mean, I thought about it, but, and thought about, you know, possibly some things to write and, you know, possible other projects, offshoot projects, but I didn't look at the actual images. And then, you know, I had to come, you know, I think editing has to do too with the final usage. And I specifically went back to look at these with the idea in mind of putting up a selection of 20 or 25 on the webpage. I didn't think about, you know, well, what can I say about, you know, the Mexican community in Wilson and put up, you know, or get together 20 or 25 photographs to deal with that. I wanted something. And by nature, that's going to be, you know, sort of a broad, thematically broad selection. And that's fine. You know, I don't care if, you know, people look at it and say, wow, this guy's all over the place with these photographs. That's fine. That's sort of what I look for. But, you know, as far as any tips, those, I combine that idea of a sort of a wide, quick edit when they are fresh and when you look at them and you still have that emotion of the moment of making that photograph. Is right there, and that's fine. You know, you use that, but then letting those sort of sit and ferment for a while and staying away from them, and then coming back and maybe taking, I don't know, I wouldn't call it a more objective, but a different sort of, you bring a different eye to those photographs after 2 or 3 weeks, I think, and that's what I tried to do in this case.
So after that, do you find yourself looking at ones you thought were good and pushing them aside and then finding others that you bypassed before and say, hey, that's actually pretty good.
Yeah, sure. Sure. I could do that with some of the ones that are up there now. And once again, like I say, I think the final usage, you know, there's a larger, you know, much larger selection, and depending on, you know, who I might pitch an idea to, or an angle that I might take, there are other photographs that would be included in those kind of edits that would be different than what's up there now. Yes.
Yeah, I'm gonna ask you about one other photo here. We don't have time to get into them all. I really like the one you took of a young African American kid. What looks like a church. He's got a little sign on his hat that says Prince.
Right, right.
So what's the backstory to that?
There was an announcement in the local newspaper. You know, in the page that has announcements of everything and anything, weddings and social get-togethers and dinners and you name it. And there was an announcement in there for the Mount Zion Primitive Baptist Church having, I think it was the first Friday night I was there, or like about a week after I got there, having their Night of Elegance. And basically what it was a Friday night service, but they had incorporated into the service sort of like almost like a fashion show for both men and women. And so people, you know, dressed up and did a little parade down the main aisle of the church and presented themselves. And the idea was basically a raffle to raise funds for the church. So people, you know, would buy raffle tickets and vote on certain people as, you know, for their presentation, their clothes, and who they were. And this kid, excuse me, this kid, you know, won in his whatever age group, in the church, the title of prince. There was a king, there was a queen, there was a prince and a princess. And he won by garnering the most votes for, you know, who he was and how he was dressed. And so I had called them, and there was a number in the newspaper, and I called him and said, you know, I know this is, you know, probably sounds a little bit strange, but I'm a photographer here visiting in town and would like to come to talk to somebody before, you know, the service, and let you know what I'd like to do. And the woman that I talked to said, fine, you know, come and talk to the pastor and just explain what you want to do. So once again, I talked to him, and his wife was there next to him when I was explaining, and I said, eyes on Main Street. And she said, oh yeah, you know, I've seen those photographs, you know. So once again, the eyes on Main Street thing was, you know, like the ticket to get into this place. And I explained to him, this is what I'm doing. These photographs, you know, possibly one of the photographs, you know, might get up, you know, in the exhibition that I'm going to do. I can't promise you that they will. But the other thing too, in a situation like that, I made sure that I sent them photographs from the shoot to an email address that the wife had given me. And so I sent them photographs, you know, within a week afterwards. And so they had those photographs. And then I made some prints and got them some prints too from that. And I tried to do that with most everybody that I photographed. I didn't do it on the print side. I didn't get prints to everybody, but almost everybody that I photographed in some way, shape, or form, I got them, you know, a small res, a low res photograph to send to them by email or WhatsApp or something.
Oh, that's cool. The kid's expression is just priceless, I think.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I like
it. You know, you wouldn't have put it in there if it wasn't, right?
Yeah. It was a nice, nice moment for sure. Yeah.
I tell you, what an experience to be able to do that, to be in a one place for a month,
uh-huh,
and just be able to shoot what you want. So was it worth the time?
Oh, it was more than worth it. I mean, it was incredible. It was, you know, I had, before I left here, you know, just an aside, I think you know this, we lost our apartment in the earthquake on 19th of September. So we had to get out, and it took about 2 months of searching and looking and, you know, finding the time to find a new place. And we did on probably about two and a half weeks before I had to leave on December 1st. So we did the move, and we got everything over to the new place. And I, you know, really during that time started to try and unpack and get a kitchen operative and get my office somewhat operative, and but left, you know, with still a whole lot of stuff in boxes. But I did take care of, you know, all the normal monthly things, you know, paying the rent, paying the insurance, paying this and that, and all that was taken care of. And, you know, the agreement, my wife said, you know, just go, you don't have to worry about it. And she really, you know, she got the place in incredible shape while I was gone. So I came back to a really, really nice, comfortable, you know, apartment, which was nice. And but at the same time, that let me that sort of the responsibilities that I had taken care of before I left let me be there in Wilson and just concentrate on the photography and making photographs. And that's basically what I did every day. And I didn't have to think about a whole lot more than going out and looking for photographs and meeting people and making contacts and finding the next place and that kind of stuff. And I mean, I've never had that experience in my life. And, you know, just as a pitch to the Eyes on Main Street Festival, it's an amazing experience. And if, you know, any of your listeners are interested, you know, you should try and make an application when the time comes. I think it'll probably be coming up later this year in, you know, the middle of the year. But it's really a wonderful experience, and can't, you know, say how great it was for me to be back in the States for that period of time and be in those circumstances and have sort of the safety net, if I wanted it, of the Mexican community that was there, that, you know, being able to speak Spanish and know where these people were from and talk to them and, you know, live with them. It was great. So yeah, can't say enough about the experience.
Oh boy. I'm so glad you told us about it. Have you been in touch with any of the other photographers?
Yes, there's a woman, who is coming. She's going to be there. She's probably there. She's getting there like right now from Italy. Diana Bagnoli. She lives in Turin in really? Northern Italy. And she's an extremely perceptive, photographer, really, really in, really great photojournalist is what I should say. I really like her work. It's not just, you know, sort of go to an exotic place and take a lot of photographs. She gets into stories, you know, really deeply. And I would really look forward to what she's going to do there. But I've talked to her, and other than her, she's the only one that I've talked to. The other ones I haven't met. You know, if I go back in April, hopefully I can. I'll be able to meet everybody there, but we'll see.
Oh, really? I hope you do come up for it.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, man. So I'm going to have to look up Diana. Matter of fact, I'm on the jury of a photo contest in Turin.
Oh, really?
Yeah, later this year. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Her last name is Bagnoli. Yeah, check her out. She's got quite a web page and a lot of different portfolios there that I think you'll like.
I'll get with you afterwards. I'll get more information about the festival and make sure we include it in the article.
That would be great. Yeah.
So once again, why don't you tell us where people can find you online?
Okay. Yeah, the web page is www.keith, K-E-I-T-H, Dana Miller, DanaMiller.com. Most everything, other stories are there, other work projects. Email is kdanamiller1@mac.com. Also have Instagram account, and I'm on Facebook. And you can get me on WhatsApp. You can, you know, just about anywhere find me. And hopefully, we'll talk about that later.
Well, Keith, thanks so much for first sharing your work and taking the time to talk.
It's always a pleasure, Bob. I appreciate your interest, and hopefully the listening audience will get something out of the conversation and keep coming back for more.